Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the official Tennis.com podcast, featuring professional coach and community leader, Kamau Murray.
Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I am your host, Kamau Murray, and we have got a treat. We have got one of the all-time greats, if not the all-time great, somebody that likes to hide in the background and let her players do the talking. She is the coach of UCLA women's team for the last 27 years, only the third coach to have the position, the second longest tenured coach at UCLA, which is a great milestone for a female head coach at a big-time school, all-time leader in victories, and an NCAA champion in 2008 and 2014. And I feel like I was there in 2014 because we were practicing at your facility. But we've got Stella Sampras on the show. Stella, thank you for taking the time to come on.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. And thank you for all those acknowledgments. It's been a great ride.
So when you think of your last name, right, only a first name made like Stella could overshadow it. I mean, like, I don't think anybody calls you Stella Sampras. They just call you Stella. Right. And when you're trying to make your mark in tennis, I don't know if your parents knew what they were doing, but like, no matter how great your siblings are, we want this kid to have her own identity. They gave you the best name in the world to overshadow a last name like Sampras. So they give you a Stella Sampras. I'm like, oh, have you talked to Stella? Right.
I know. I mean, it is, you know, growing up when I was younger, I hated my name because it was like not a typical name and you always wanted to kind of fit in with your friends and stuff. So I didn't like my name, but, you know, it is a great name. I mean, I've had a lot of people, you know, use the Marlon Brando Stella thing and that's always been fun. And so, yeah, I really do appreciate my name. It's nice to have, you know, nowadays it's nice to have you know, a name that's, you know, not very common. So it goes with Sampras, so I like it. It's a nice thing. So thank you.
Let me just say this. So I am very familiar with UCLA. I'm a fan of the school. If someone told me that they wanted to go pro but needed a year or two to mature, UCLA is number one on my list of recommendation, because from what I see at the program, you all run it where the kids have a lot of responsibility. They self-manage their schedule. They practice two or three times a day and the coaches are always available. Is that what you think is so special? Because I mean, we're going to go down a list later of players that have transitioned to the tour successfully, but I mean, like, how have you systematically made UCLA such a powerhouse so often?
Well, I mean, UCLA is a name, obviously, and people want to come to UCLA. So I'm really fortunate to have such a great, you know, great place to be at. And, you know, and I have to say, my assistant coach, Rance Brown, has been a huge, you know, help to me and a great, one of the best coaches out there in the country. So I think we just put a good team together with both Rance and I. We're both very different. And then just having a place like UCLA where it has the whole package of, you know, the tennis history, the, you know, every sport at UCLA is super strong, and then having the academics. And it's not bad to be in right in LA where there's like so much action and people do like to be, you know, in a big city. And I think it's just, you know, a place where people enjoy. And not only all of that, but it's like, you know, the weather. You can't beat the weather, too. And to be able to play outdoor tennis all year round is a great thing. And I think, you know, the players that have come through our program have, you know, improved. And that's our whole goal, is always to develop our players to be the best they can be. If it's going pro, if it's just graduating, that's always our goal. And I feel like we're pretty authentic and real and honest with our players. And it's, I think Rance and I have, you know, have done a nice job of just keeping it real and working, you know, like you said, it takes a full team to, you know, develop a player with, you know, you have to have a good staff. And, but I am proud. I am proud of what we've done. And, you know, it doesn't get easier. Every year is, you know, a new year of recruiting and trying to get the right player, the right fit for our team. And so it's a great place. I just feel like UCLA is a great place, and I'm just fortunate to be able to be, you know, a coach here for this many years and been around, you know, just the best players in the country.
Yeah, you know, the first time I parked at the parking deck and walked down the stairs to the courts, I think the football field was under construction, right? The practice field. And I was thinking, if I was a coach here, I would say, go walk around campus, meet me back in my office, and I have the pen and paper ready for you to sign.
I wish it was that easy.
So has it gotten harder? Because you look at like programs like UNC, who's had a good run, Stanford, Arizona State, they've all, you know, got Desiree Krawcheck and a few players that are on tour now. Like, has it gotten harder now? I mean, I remember when you all came to go play the indoors, and it was like Abby Forbes and his crew, and out now with the transfer portal and NIL. Maybe that was at one point where it's like, go walk around. But now it's like, I got to keep you. I got to sell you.
Yes, it has gotten a lot harder. I mean, gosh, there's so much more parity now and such great programs, great coaches. And, you know, players, you know, again, are coming from all over the world now, I think more than ever. And all those things you mentioned are a big factor to, you know, a lot of the players and parents. They want, you know, the best for their kid. And so they're going to try to get the best, you know, the best for them. And what is that? Financially, it could help players and families. So you really need to know your recruit and try to compete with all these other schools that, you know, may have more things. Every school has a great facility. All the schools have just upped their game. And so it is definitely more competitive in recruiting. And so it's definitely made us have to go into like the portal and go overseas. And we're not getting, you know, it's not automatic that, you know, we're going to get the top Americans at UCLA. We've got to work for it. So but it makes, I think, college tennis so much stronger. I think the level of tennis has gotten really strong because of all of that. You know, we're getting players that are not turning pro right away, and they're playing, going to a college and playing college tennis. And then you're getting players from all over the world as well. So the level of competition is really very, very high, which makes it really exciting. And I think it's good for college tennis to have so much parity. Like, you've got schools from all over the country doing well, and there's a lot of movement. So it's, I think it's tougher, but I think it's good for the game.
So let me ask you this, because you all, when I think of UCLA, I think of like, you know, Abby Spears, Shibahara, everyone thinks about, I'm from the Midwest, right? So we think about Cal McPherson, and then like everyone knows Jen Brady. So when do you advise players to move on, right? Because I think when Jen Brady was there, I don't think she played one for you, right? Did she?
No.
And then Grand Slam sort of finalist. So when do you advise a player to move on? Like, if I'm a sophomore, when would Stella walk up to me and say, hey, you know what? I think you should turn pro.
Well, it's funny. Jenny Brady was a different, you know, she's a phenomenon. Like, we knew our first day of practice with her, this person's not gonna stay for 4 years just by the way she hit the ball. I mean, she was gonna be a pro. And you know, with Jenny, she came in and we had Robin Anderson, our number one player, playing for us. So she came in on a very, with a very strong team with Robin and Chanel Van Wyn and Kyle McPhillips, like you said. And so she played two and three for us. Her first year she played two, and she just, yeah, what, and she just said, I don't care where I play. I just want to play the right way. And I have so much respect for her with that kind of mindset, that the number didn't matter. She just wanted to improve and continue to develop. And I was just so pleased to hear that. And I tell that all the time to my current team and my, you know, freshmen that come in, because I think it made a huge difference with her and just the way she went about with her tennis. And, you know, by her second year, she was, you know, she played a lot of pro tournaments, and you could tell that her game was just getting bigger and bigger. And she was very upfront with us as well, like that she wanted to be a pro and turn pro. And after that first year, she took the fall off and then did really well. I think she made it up to like 250. And we knew that was going to be her last year with us. So, you know, it's just a team effort. We talk to their coaches. And for me, it's like, as long as they're upfront with us and they let us know that this is where they're thinking and what they want to do, we're fine with it. We want them out there to succeed. And obviously we do give their input, but you know, if they have the finances and they have a good team around them, you never know. I never want to hold back a player to turn pro if they have, you know, a good team around them and we feel like they'll be successful, then we're all for it. We want Bruins out there on the pro tour and doing well. So, but I would have to say, you know, Jenny Brady was just, you know, we knew she was going to be special out there, and she was all about her tennis, and we were very, very fortunate to have her. And it was really neat to see her runs. And I know she'll be coming back and you know, get back to where she was when she got injured. So,
explain that to us, because one of the things I think when you think about like football and basketball, you don't see many of them taking the fall off. Can you explain that to the listeners in terms of tennis maybe taking the fall off to travel, but then coming back in the spring, right, when there's like the dual match season and your scholarship is still waiting for you?
Right. And a lot of times, you know, I think freshmen should go the full year. And then if they've made some jumps and they want to like build up their points, the fall is mainly individual. It's all individual tournaments. So they can either play the college tournaments and pro, because we also do take players to play some pro tournaments as well. But some of them want to do it more full time without school. So they can take the fall off and then come back in January when the season starts and then play the season out. And again, sometimes that's, they just kind of get a good feel of where they're at as far as score and the points. And if they want to, like, that could be their last year, they come back and play, you know, the following fall, or take they have to just make sure that they keep up with their credits. So if they do take another fall off, they need to take some classes either during the summer or maybe even during the fall and take them online, so you just keep up with your credits. It is common with a lot of players that want to, you know, play professional and want to build up their points.
Got it. So they have to catch up the next summer. So if I take the fall off, I come back in the spring, I need to catch up before next fall. I can't just add another semester after my 4 years is up.
No. Yeah, you definitely. And we're at UCLA, we're on quarters. So, you know, we have three classes in the fall that they would have to make up the following fall. So there are some NCAA rules where you have to keep up your credits by your sophomore and junior year.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Okay, so another question is, you know, we talked about when you would advise a player to leave, like when they've shown signs that they are ready and can't compete. When do you stop recruiting a player? Because obviously, you know, like if I'm a college coach and I have a player that's top 50 ITF and they're mm-hmm. undecided on whether or not they're going to turn pro or go to college, maybe they're waiting until they see how they do after Junior Wimbledon. You know, like, when mm-hmm. do you stop recruiting a player before you lose a really good recruit waiting on maybe somebody that's top 20 in the world and undecided on college or not?
That's a tough question. And there have been times where it's worked out for us, and then there have been times where it didn't work out for us, where we're like all of a sudden counted on a player that would come to UCLA. Like Caroline Dolahide, we recruited her up until probably the summer before, but she was very, again, very upfront with us. If she got to a certain point, she was going to go pro. So it was looking like it was going to go that way. So we kind of got prepared to make sure we had someone back, a backup to take that spot. But, you know, you have to just kind of follow and communicate with the recruit and the family and just make sure that, you know, we're all on the same page. And just so we know, but I mean, yeah, nowadays, if that happens, then, you know, there might be times when, okay, I couldn't sign anyone for the fall, but then I can get someone in January. So there are some things that you can do to just kind of catch up if, you know, all of a sudden this player turned pro and you weren't expecting it. There's not a certain time frame. I would just make sure that you just know, you know, what you got, what your backups are. And of course you don't want to lose a good backup. So you kind of have to make decisions, and sometimes you make the right one or the wrong one. It's just sometimes a matter of a little luck there. But I think if you communicate with the recruit and the family, you just at least you know all the information, and then you just can make a good decision of like what you want to do. Either hold off and wait on the recruit, or just say, well, we need a decision right now, and then they can move on and then we move on. But there's been so many different situations like that, and they're all very different. There's no like one, you know, one way to do it, I would say. It's just you always want to try to get the best person in the program, and it works out sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't.
I remember Delaney Hewitt was another one that was like on the fence on whether or not to come. Name a player that you were like, damn, if this player didn't go pro and came to us for a year, we would have won a national championship that year.
Oh boy. Well, Caroline Dolahide would have been a great one, you know. I don't know if we would have won, but she's amazing. There have been a few that we, you know, Reese Brantmeyer we recruited to the end, and she chose North Carolina. I mean, we were right in there, but you know, who else? Oh gosh, we go back to Alexandra Stevenson. We went back there. She would have come to UCLA if she didn't turn pro.
Oh,
we've had quite a few that would have come here if they didn't turn pro. Boy, it's been a while back, but those are a few.
So we see so many names that are always in the running and so many names that always land on the team, right? How, from a lineup standpoint, right? Like, you know, if you look at it and say, okay, you know, Denny Brady is playing two and number three. How do you decide, mm-hmm. right? Because is it a challenge? Like, you know, when I was in college, we played challenge ladder every week for our spots. And in some weeks, the coach is like, no, you're playing here because I don't trust you here. And I need you to play here and be a guarantee. Right? How do you sort of manage, number one, the players' egos? Number two, the parents. And then number three, putting people where they sort of can, where the team can win.
Right. You know, it all starts with the recruiting process. I mean, I never guarantee a player they're going to play a spot, but I do tell them, you know, this is our number one goal is to win a team championship. So I'm going to, you know, we're going to help them and train them to be the best they can be, but we're still looking to make, you know, to get 4 points. So there might be a situation where, you know, I think mostly the freshmen that come in, I would put them lower than I would my upperclassmen. So with Jennifer coming in, we had Robin Anderson playing one, actually her whole 4 years. So for Jenny, she, you know, came in, she didn't dominate like she did her second year. So she had some growing pains there, and I think it was a great spot for her to play two or three her first year and second year. But having Robin at one, she just had the experience. And she was very, you know, obviously comfortable up there and winning up there. So it made sense for that situation. But yeah, we'll have kids that want to play high, which is great. We want them to play high. But again, we want to make sure that we put people in spots that, for one, you know, the freshmen have to kind of earn it. And then, you know, the upperclassmen have been through the system. They're more probably more confident, more experience playing in the college, you know, college stage, and they will probably play a little bit higher if it came down to it being very close. But I don't do challenge matches. I do look at results. I look at everything. And it's just communicating, making sure the players know kind of where they stand and being really honest with them, even though it could be, you know, not what they want to hear. I think that's been the best way for me, because I never want to lead players on. I want them to know where they're at, and they're at UCLA. So it's not going to be, it's going to be very competitive. And I think that that's where the players are the best is when we do have a competitive team, and they are competitive, you know, with each other, but in a healthy way. Like they're going to make each other better by being competitive. And I think that's been where, you know, we've had like the best success and people buying in. And when you're winning as a team, a lot of things just, you know, you don't have a lot of the issues that you would if you were losing. So luckily we've won a lot. So I haven't, you know, I've been able to kind of keep people happy and keep people, you know, understanding the team concept of this is why you're here. And once they get through a year, they get it. Once they're at NCAAs and they see that it doesn't matter what number they're at, if you can win a team title, it's the best experience in the world. Playing those dual matches and just winning as a team, it really doesn't matter where they're playing. And to win it is a dream. And it's definitely, I feel like that's where they get it after that first year.
Yeah. So does the transfer portal now, with players being able to be unhappy and leave without having to sit out a year, does it influence where you play people? Do you kind of like, oh, well, forget it. Let me just play her at number three because she's going to like, you know, leave if I don't sort of succumb to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, I'm lucky at UCLA. I don't know, a lot of them don't want to leave, you know.
Right, we're going to leave and walk in the snow on the East Coast, right, guys? Don't do that. Don't leave.
You know, I would say the ones that want to leave are the ones that aren't playing. And I think that's for the majority of the players. And I get that. I get they want to play in the lineup. If they're playing 7-8 on the bench, then I can see like there might be another place where they could play higher and more, you know, more consistent in the lineup. But yeah, I mean, we've been fortunate that we've had, you know, I want to say like our graduation rate's great. Like I think not that I do anything. I think it's just trying to keep the players, you know, not necessarily happy, but just like understand where they're at. They're appreciate where they're at. And I think once they understand that, you know, I think they'll either stay, or if they're not playing, I think they'll just in transfer. And I would encourage that. If I don't think they're going to play, you know, the next two or three years, then I would say it might be a better place to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's a great thing that they could, you know, get into to see and could be a better fit for them, you know, at another place. I mean, we've had players transfer in the past, and, you know, it's just sometimes it is not a good fit with the way they see things. The way I see things are different than I think it's good for them to move on, go somewhere else where they feel they're going to be happier.
So who was the best player that you've had that didn't turn pro that you thought, okay, this kid has it? I mean, in tennis, we actually see a lot of kids who have the ability, but, you know, lucky for them, have other options, right? They don't have to go and grind down a tour. Can you name a player that was like on your team and you like, man, this girl's got it. Like it'd be a rough year or two, but this girl will be top 100 in the world, but they never tried it.
Wow. That's a tough one, because most of them will try it. You know, most of the top ones will try it, but I think it's the ones that they try it, but they don't love it. They don't love the tour. And if they love the tour, then maybe they could have done it, because it's a grind. You have to get through a couple years of the grind to really have a chance to get in the top 100. And we've had players like a Carrie Phoebus, who won NCAAs for us years ago, probably 25 years ago, I think, you know, had the mentality to be great and do well. But I just don't think she liked the lifestyle of the tour. You know, most of them have at least tried it. But again, like, they just, you know, it's tough. It's tough out there. You know, I'm happy that a lot of our players are still out there. Robin Anderson's still out there. And
I got one of the nicest, you know, people on the planet.
Yes, and Catherine Harrison has done really well. And I mean, there have been, you know, quite a group of Americans that played for us in the 2014 team that most of them are some of them, I mean, I don't want to say most, but some of them are still playing out there, which is great. But yeah.
Well, you've been so generous with time. Like, I have to ask one last question, because obviously, you know, mm-hmm. I coach a bunch of kids. I've coached some pros. You deal with the parents and all that kind of stuff. How many times mm-hmm. have you had to pull out on the parent? Ma'am, my brother won 14 Grand Slams. I know what I'm doing. Just go ahead. Just go have a seat. Just please let me do this.
Oh gosh. You know, there's always a few, but again, like, when we're doing well and winning, you don't hear from them, and it's that's the key. And we've done really well, but I mean, I really don't get too involved with the parents. If they want to call me, they can, but most of them have pretty much stayed away. And you know why? I really tell our current players, if you have a problem, you know, come talk to me. I do not want to hear from your parents. Like, I really emphasize the independence of, you know, these college age kids to be more independent from their parents and really, you know, express themselves, express their unhappiness or whatever it is to, you know, directly to me or to the staff so that we can work it out ourselves. So I say that the first meeting of our, you know, of our team in the fall, and I think they really don't want their parents to get involved. So I think we just do a good job of making sure we communicate with the players and for them to grow and learn how to, you know, express themselves to us when it's uncomfortable. And I know it's and I think that's a great thing for them to learn, because obviously when they leave UCLA or any school, they're going to have to deal with their bosses and coworkers in uncomfortable situations. So I'm open. I'm an open door policy. They can come see me, talk to me. I'm a very good listener. I will be open to anything. And I feel like that has, you know, helped them feel more comfortable to come directly to me if they have any issues. So I'm very fortunate. I haven't had a lot of problems with parents coming in and trying to, you know, change things or do anything. So I think having Rance with me as well is a great, great thing. Us as a team, we work well together, and we've been really fortunate to be really direct.
Rance is so great. I mean, when I'm on your court, there's been a few times where the energy wasn't right, and I'm like, Rance, why don't you come on over here? Just bring your smile. Your skin looks great. Your shirt is tucked in. You look like a million bucks. Every day, even after practice, the shirt is still tucked in and the hat is still on straight. Come over here, reset the energy on my court, because we're having a rough day.
He's the best. He's the best dressed coach, I think, of anyone. And he presents himself like so such a professional. And he does. He has such a great way with the kids and so much experience. He's such a great coach. And, you know, he's always brings so much knowledge to, you know, the girls, to the coaches, to, you know. So we're very fortunate. He's really been, you know, such a great, great person to work with. And that's really what's kept me in this, I think, for so long, because it's so much fun with him.
Last question. You've got two young up-and-comers yourself, Sophia and Savannah. I think I had a chance to pick like 15 balls side to sides, and it was long legs. I was like, I remember we were on the backside. I was like, come on, every girls, let me see what you got. Since your mama's such a good coach, let me see what you got. How is it raising daughters of your own to play now?
Hard. It's so hard. It's very stressful. It's harder than watching my team play, that's for sure. Watching your kids play, I really feel for parents. It's not easy. And just navigating them through this junior tennis is so difficult. And luckily, my husband is very involved, and he's the one kind of traveling with them. He's a dadager. And so he's got the tough job of traveling and, you know, reporting scores to me. But it's tough. It is hard. It's stressful. But it's also joyful too. You know, as we know with sports and the highs and lows, the highs are so, so great. So great to see your kid happy and just see, you know, growing up and learning. But the lows are tough. Lows are tough. I can't tell you how many times, you know, they just didn't think they could do it anymore. And I just said, just stay in it. Just stay in it. It'll be worth it. Don't quit on me. So it's not easy. So much emotion, but I'm so grateful they're still playing and they're going to play college tennis. And it's just going to be, I'm just so happy that, they'll get to experience college tennis and just be an athlete on campus. And it's very happy for them.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. It's always great seeing you. One of the things I always admire about you is your nice, calm demeanor. You will like come on court and have been there for 5 minutes and I wouldn't have noticed you in the back corner. You like walk so soft. And talk. I mean, when I walk on the court, you see me coming, right? You know, but you just happen to just like appear out of nowhere and never saw you there. So your demeanor is admirable. I don't know how you do it, because I feel like I've yelled and screamed on your courts more than you. Thank you for taking the time out. Wish you luck this season. It's never easy, and it gets harder with all the changing rules, but you are one of the best. And I want to congratulate you on your 500th victory.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel very fortunate. It's been a great place for me, and I love being at UCLA, and I'm just grateful to be able to be in it for this long and hopefully many more years.
All right. Well, this has been the Tennis.com podcast with the all-time winningest coach in UCLA women's history, Stella Sampras. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Stella.
Thank you, Kamal.